Episode of Fertilla on Air. I'm Mike Stockton, coming to you from London, England.
And I'm Balázs Ferenczi, coming to you from Karlsruhe, Germany.
Balázs, how are you?
I'm good. As I said before we started recording, there's some things cooking, and been better, but I've also been worse. So let's just say that I can't wait for the nice weather.
Yeah,
finally arrive, because this, you know, they always say April, it's kind of tricky because it's cold. Today I had sunshine, I had wind, and I had hail, all within like 2 hours.
Yeah, wow.
It's been crazy.
It got cold here. I think it was like 2 degrees yesterday and very windy. Next week, it apparently goes up to 18. I will be in a place that is 34 degrees for literally 96 hours.
Could be worse.
Vegas, baby.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I will be doing that. But hopefully when I get back, it's nice. And
it should be.
Retire to the pub garden nearby.
Should be. And next month is May. And at the end of May, I'm coming over again. So... Okay. She'll see you in about a month, or less than a month, actually. I have your stuff with me. I hope, because, you know, one of the things that's in the jar, it's bigger than, I mean, it's the I think, what's the limit? 100 milliliters or something, and that's 250. So I don't know if I can take it in my luggage, but I'll try my best.
Okay, well...
I'm talking about paprika cream, by the way, if anybody's wondering.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's nothing illegal about that. It's just...
Cheapoche.
It's like, yeah, it's just like a spicy paprika cream.
Told you, that's the name for a dog. If I get a puppy needs a name, then
no,
cheapoche is the name.
It actually is cheapoche with the U, but...
Well...
Yeah, there you go.
Don't goulash is our pronunciation.
Funnily enough, believe it or not, I had a phone call with our Southern Californian friends today. I had a little bit of a chat with Matt and Greg, and I had to you know, bring up the goulash topic. And I he said he made a salmon goulash the other day. I said, dude, I'm gonna come over and just kill you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't
that
work.
That man is playing with his life, you know.
How fishy and oily would that be?
I mean, there's a fish soup, right? That's something else. But, and that can be quite oily as well. But I mean, salmon goulash, are you crazy? No, that's not.
Slow cooking that over a fire for how many hours?
Yeah, it would fall apart. It would just be like mush. I mean, no. But that man has no style, I'm telling you. You know, Matt, well, I love you very much, but that was that comment.
One of these days, you know, that state's going to crack off and just float away. So maybe it's better if they're making that stuff. Well, more fish, they'll be surrounded by water. And there you go.
We're going to be at the shore waving.
From Vegas.
Take your fish guiash. There you go. Yeah, no. I love those guys. Spirit of Time podcast. I could, you know, we could do a pour check like they do, because I have something with me. I don't know if you have a beer. We also mentioned you.
I don't have
beer,
but I have something else. But go ahead.
We also mentioned you because I said, I'm so happy to be on the phone. I said, yeah, when Stockton's not here. And then we mentioned you, and he said, you're probably in a pub. I said, yeah, he's probably just having some fun at the pub with some neck oil.
No neck oil for me. You know me, I'm a gravity drawn ale guy, but the, or cask ale guy, but the, here's the reality, right? Like I've cut it back. I've decided that, I cannot keep, keep going and drinking beer 3, 4, 5 nights a week. So I have decided during the week I'm going to behave. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight I did open some red wine because we're having pasta and it was that kind of week. So I'm having a Chianti Classico.
Ooh, that's nice. I must admit, I'm not much of a red wine guy. I'm more of a white wine guy.
I ate his liver with some Chianti and a nice, and what was it? Fava beans and some nice Chianti. Yeah, yeah.
Let us know in the comments what movie this is from.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
No, it's not. So you made a Negroni. I got to know, what are your ingredients? What are your three? What are the three brands that you
chose? The brand, so the Campari is Campari. The vermouth, some French stuff, because, you know, Alsace is just like literally 5 kilometers from here. So about 3 miles across the bridge.
Is it local or is it just?
Yeah, I think it's like from this. Yeah, I think it's something from this area, right? So, and I don't know exactly, but I bought it in France. It was okay. And the gin, nothing fancy this time, I must admit. Believe it or not, the last gin I used was a Sparkasse gin. And again, this is a German insider joke. Sparkasse is like, what would be the American equivalent of Sparkasse? Like a state?
No, well.
State bank?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something like that. So yeah. Sparkasse was this bank system. Basically, it's like, I don't even know how it.
It's like a credit union. That's what it would be like in America.
Basically, yeah, exactly. So they all look the same. They have the same logo, but they're small entities depending on the state where you are. But they all look the same and they all have kind of the same visual identity. And anyways, so the story was that a buddy of mine, he's a manager of a few branches here, like a local whatever area manager, whatever. And I saw him before Christmas and he said, usually give our, you know, I wouldn't say VIP clients, but our, I don't know, special clients, whatever, a Christmas gift. And I'm not a special client, but I'm his friend, so I guess I am in a way. Not by the amount of money that's on my account, but by knowing him and being a member of the bank for like 10 years. And he said, you can choose between such and such. And I don't know what the other thing was, but this is a gift from Sparkasse. It's a bottled gin. And I was like, that's the first, you know, Sparkasse gin. And so he said that there was a gin distillery, a local gin distillery, and they got some financial issues. They took a loan. They couldn't pay it back because there was some problem with somebody else. So the Sparkasse said, we're going to bail you out and we're going to buy all your stock.
Wow.
All you have to do is make a private label so we can gift it out to our customers. So basically that's what they did. So they kept the company afloat for obvious reasons. They make the money back eventually. And they had this special selection of, I don't know, 200, 300 bottles made that they would gift to customers. And I got one of those bottles. So
nice.
It's a local gin. And it's a good gesture. It's a nice thing for them to do that.
Well, I mean, and look, I don't want to rain on anyone's gin parade, but gin is just about as easy to make as vodka, which is
absolutely, yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Just vodka with some shrubbery in it. So
yeah,
it's, but no, that's cool. I mean, I remember, I think I still have it, the Oris bottle of gin, the little, sample. I think you were with me when we were in Basel and they had like that thing at their, boutique.
Ah, yes, 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 yes. We had the beer that was also Oris branded.
Yep.
You know, these huge ice buckets. Right.
I snaked a little sampler of Oris gin. I have
That's from. What is that? Seven, 8 years ago.
Yeah,
2017, 2018, something like that. 7, 8 years ago. Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. Oh wow. This time I use a different gin. Something just. You know. My go to is usually Roku, so the Japanese one, or Monkey 47 because of the connection, or sometimes I use needle gin is also from the Black Forest, but my two favorites are Roku and Monkey 47, as I said.
Yeah, I'm a Tanqueray drinker, but not anymore because they did what Jack Daniels did years ago and watered down their product to go to a lower proof, which I think is about as bad as it could be. So I'll drink Tanqueray 10, but yeah, I liked normal Tanqueray because it's very piney.
Mm-hmm.
I like a very old style London dry gin, but.
But if you ever see Needle in the UK, buy it. That's from the Black Forest. And Sometimes you can pick it up. I mean, it's not that expensive anyways. It's about 30, 40 euros or so.
Schwarzwald. Schwarzwald.
Yeah, exactly. So Black Forest, it has like a pine tree. I think that's the logo or the label on it. Because, you know, Needle, obviously. Very piney. Sometimes it comes in a package, like it's a gift, or maybe not even a gift, but whatever. It's like a gin and a tonic from also from the Black Forest. So sometimes you can find it in these little special editions.
Nice.
But yeah.
So I'd like to switch gears.
Mm.
We realize we haven't talked about sneakers. I know we're 10 and a half minutes in, but we're late this week on publishing, so, and we haven't talked in a while, so
yeah.
Balazs, I haven't seen anything in a long time on the sneakers app that I want to buy.
Oh, you did? You just sent one to me today.
Oh, that one? That was terrible. Yeah,
terrible.
So Nike on the sneakers app, for those of you who don't know, this is like their more funky and limited type selection. They always show their upcoming, but they do these surprise drops, and they did this weird patent leather blue dunk, these dunks that had, it was basically like one panel, so there was like no swoosh, it was just contained like weird computery code and stuff like that.
It looks like rubber, like it's not even patent leather, it looks like a rubber
Smurf shoes.
But
I keep looking, and I must say, Friday morning, and I don't know for Germany, because I know sometimes they do the dates differently.
Mm-hmm.
There are, and I know you're not a gum sole fan, but there are some dunks coming on Friday that are apparently like an ode to the 90s Mexico City sneaker culture.
The white and blue, you mean? The white with the blue swoosh? Yeah, it looks good.
I like these.
That looks good, yeah.
I'm thinking about these.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm really not, gum sole, I'm okay with it. I have, I think, one vintage Reeboks with the gum sole. These actually look nice, I must admit.
They're tempting.
What is that? 120, 130 euros. Yeah, it's not too bad.
Not too bad. And you know, the other thing, so I've been basically living in, you know, Stan Smith's or my New Balance. And
well, must admit, there's nothing wrong with those.
No, nothing wrong. But as I start to go into the city more and more for work, shoes take a beating. Absolutely, they take a beating.
Mm-hmm.
I think that. Not that I'm like creating an excuse to buy another pair of shoes, but I don't think I could ever really have enough white dominant shoes, you know?
Yeah.
To just, they go with everything. So I don't know. I'll think about that pair. I will. So.
Well, now that we're talking sneakers, actually, I must admit that this next week, so we're recording this on a Wednesday. And this will come out this week, and hopefully another episode will come out next Tuesday. So when the second episode comes out that week, so next weekend, there's a race, like a run, like a race. Yeah, it's a race for some. For me, it's just a run. In Karlsruhe, it's 8.9 kilometers, right? It's called the Badische Meile. And in May, in June, there is another one, which is like 5.5 kilometers. So for the past few weeks, I've been kind of training for that run, right? Mm-hmm. It was a good excuse to, you know, basically move my ass a little bit. And every weekend, a colleague and I would go to the forest or to the nearby, you know where I live, so some trees around here, and we would do like 9 kilometers or 5, 6, 7, 8 kilometers, whatever. And I would do another run during the week. And so I've been using my Cloudmonster on Cloudmonster shoes. And I must admit, since I started running, well, pretty semi-often, I would say, to run too often anymore, but I used to. I've been through my Nikes, a couple of Nikes, three Nikes, a couple of Under Armours, three, four Under Armours, and this one. This shoe is by far the best.
Really?
It looks disgusting. It's hideous. It's ugly. It's bulky. Mike, it is so freaking comfortable. It's unbelievable.
It's not too cushioned?
No. It's the Cloudmonster that I have is absolutely not something you should use on track and or on softer soil, you know? Yeah. But if you're running in the city, or if you're running, because most of the time I'm running on concrete or, you know, around the house and, you know, here. If you want to use it on like salt or like a path, like a forest path or something, that's not the shoe for you. And get your Nikes, or maybe they have some stuff. I'm sure they have some stuff for that. But if you want something that you can use in the gym or on the street or whatever, these are so amazingly comfortable. It's unbelievable. I would never wear them on the street, you know. That's the senior tourist stuff you see. What the Monarchs used to be, the American tourists coming to Europe. That's the On now.
No, I'm with you. They're all over.
They're all over, but they are the Cloudmonster, and now the Cloudmonster 2 is coming out. I think, or already came out actually. Extremely comfortable for running. Super, super comfortable.
Maybe I'll try. I think I told you I tried some Hokas at one point, and they were so cushioned that they hurt my knees. And so if they're too spongy, it doesn't work for me.
Do you remember when I was in, I think I told you this, when I was in Miami, I was shown some other shoes that were not out yet.
Well, somebody we both know, I missed this person, I believe, when he was here in London, because I would possibly have some Cloudmonsters now too.
You're very cryptic, but
okay.
You'll tell me afterwards. In any case, when I was in Miami, I saw the guy from Manny from the On store. He showed me the then new Cloudmonster Hyper, which was not out yet at the time. Now it is out. It's the newest thing. Cloudmonster Hyper, €230, pretty expensive, but they look good, and apparently they're comfortable. I have not tried them on. I only have the Cloudmonster. It's perfect for me. So if you're wondering what shoe to get for running, I suggest you try out some of the On shoes. And it's not a paid advertisement, but I was extremely surprised how comfortable the shoes are.
Okay.
Because 9 kilometers is, I mean, it's not a lot, but it is, you know, it's 9 kilometers. It's
enough. Yeah.
It's enough. Yeah. And I warm up, you know, I do my Terra gun?
Yep.
Yeah. So I do that. I warm up and everything, and then I use the Cloudmonster, and wow, it was really, really good.
Sure. So I'm going to transition us to one more shoe-related thing.
Mm.
So I used to play a lot of tennis. Yeah, played in high school, and I wasn't amazing, but I could hold my own, you know, and. Then I really stopped when I turned 16, got a car and all that other good stuff. So, but decided to pick it back up here and played for the first time yesterday in years. And it went all right. But I need to buy tennis shoes. And it got me thinking, some of these classic shoes, like, it's interesting, I went on some websites just looking at tennis shoes. And funnily enough, they're kind of a lot like basketball shoes today. They all look sort of the same. It's hard to look at a shoe right now and tell what sport it's for. Mm-hmm. Especially because the uppers have all these advanced materials that don't really separate them anymore.
Unless it's cleats. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even there, I mean, they've got Jordan cleats and stuff like
true.
That.
But yeah. True.
So I was curious why, like, I don't know, say Adidas or K-Swiss for that matter.
K-Swiss.
Why wouldn't they make a shoe that is largely styled on the OG, mm-hmm. but somehow inside and on the bottoms updated, you know, with modern whatever it needs, right?
So basically almost what you just said, like Jordans that look like a Jordan 6.
Yeah, exactly.
With the advanced technology and the whatever sole.
Even Jordan 1 cleats I've seen. So, like, why can't they do that? Because, yeah, I just think it would be pretty cool. Like, it just feels like a missed opportunity to me.
I mean, I have to say, when it comes to Adidas, their shoe game, and, well, you know me, and both you and I, love Stan Smith. It is really my go-to sneaker. But other than that, I don't even look at those shoes anymore. They're just not good. I mean, there's the James Harden basketball shoe, and I think probably Damian Lillard had one. They're just so ugly. They're absolutely not cool. I just don't like them anyways. So I think when it comes to these things, they're like so behind Nike. I cannot answer you why, but
where are they from? But
yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, and you know the big scandal about the German football team, right? Mm-mm. Well, it's not new anymore. It's a few weeks old. The German national team was Adidas, mm-hmm. like for like 75 years or 80 years. I don't know.
Okay,
and the new. The contract renewal for 2027, I think, a few weeks ago, was up, and Nike won the contract. So from 2026 or 2027, I think, the German national team, for the first time in 80 years or 78 years, will wear Nike gear instead of Adidas. And well, because Adidas offered 50 mil and Nike offered 100 mil. Jeez. And the German national team or the national team franchise or whatever has some financial issues because of previous mismanagement. So they needed the money. So there you go.
Maybe it was Matt Damon's character in there doing the negotiation. Wow.
Or the siblings doing the negotiation from the Adidas family, remember?
Yeah. Well, so if anybody out there has ideas on tennis shoes, I'd love to hear them. The name that looms largest in all the different ratings is, guess what, Balash?
Agassi?
No, the brand. What's the brand?
Tennis brand?
That you think looms largest in tennis shoes?
Wait a second.
You have 5 seconds to choose.
Well, was Nike something? I don't know.
Asics.
Oh, Asics. Yes. Oh, I could have been, yeah.
They're like in the top 10 of everybody's list. It's like they're all over it. It's interesting.
I think once I had Sergio Tacchini tennis shoes. Or Tacchini? Tacchini?
I'd like some Lecoq Sportifs.
but then you have the On tennis shoes because, you know, of Roger Federer.
Yeah, so the coach that we have here has those, and I'm sure gets them, you know, like for free to try out and stuff. Mm-hmm. And just like your running shoes, they're like super tall soles that don't look very stable to me. Mm-hmm. But I'll ask them how they are. So,
you know, funny thing is one of my buddies is a handball player, right? I mean, I guess fairly good handball player, given that he's the captain of the national team. But that's not the point. He told me that because he's a huge sneaker guy, and I say that handball sneakers, just like tennis, they're just not that cool. Tennis shoes were great in the 80s and 90s, and they're like, I guess, pretty fashionable still, like the Stan Smiths and the stuff that Andre used to wear and things like that. But since then, it's not really. And the same goes for handball shoes. And he said, many of the handball players, they play in basketball shoes, like low tops. Because for some reason, handball just never developed. The sport itself just never developed.
Not enough reason to create their own shoes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like indoor football, like soccer or basketball, low tops. There are handball shoes, but they're like, yeah. I think the Samba or the one of the Adidas, this cult, one of those cult shoes, they were originally handball. Designed for handball.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I looked up whether I could still wear Stan Smith to play tennis, and it says absolutely not.
No, shoes.
But come on, man. The dude won 2 majors in those. Okay. Different brackets, different style, whatever. But
Kareem had 30, I don't know how many thousand points in Chuck's. But look at the guy. He walks like he's 150.
Those I'd still like to gone. Get good again and kick someone's ass in a pair of Stan Smiths. So that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice. But I think it's better for your joints and your muscles to have some proper protection. So have something nice. Or hopefully the Nikes, the Andres will come out soon. And then
they're not going to be good either, I'm sure. That's what it'll say. But or my Bo Jacksons. I thought about strapping those on because that's what I used to play in, cross trainers. So,
well, there's the not the Bo Jacksons, but what's the one the Jumpman Jack TR?
Yeah, I saw that. They're coming out with someone in like a week or two.
200 Sailing Dark Mocha.
Not gonna happen.
You know who's gonna buy them? Charlie Dunn.
He only wears Travis Scott's.
That's a Travis Scott. That is a Travis Scott.
Oh, gosh.
That's a Jumpman Jack, Cactus Jack, Travis Scott. Yeah. Paging Charlie Dunn.
There we go. Well, it's time to talk about watches 27 minutes in, but guess what, folks? You get a double billing within like 5 days of each other, so we'll get all the silliness out of the way here. Oh, I've got one other silly topic. Maybe I'll save that for our
split.
Okay. Yeah. So, shall we do the Hangalanx controller?
Let's do that. Yes.
All right. Who's leading off this week?
Me.
There you go.
I'm gonna send you a few pictures, and I'm gonna do a better one, and you can put it in the show note. I love these watches. I love the vintage one. When I heard that they're re-releasing them, I was super excited, extremely excited. I think there is nothing more fun than a 70s funky, simple kind of garbage movement powered design watch. And the Omida Digitrend was one of these watches, right? Jump power movement, 1 jewel jump power movement with a quite smart prism display, basically, that kind of functions like a periscope. So when you see the watch and look at the watch, the hour and minute discs are facing you inside, but they display the time on the side of the case thanks to this prism system. And so that watch kind of, and the whole brand kind of, you know, like many brands, succumbed to the quartz crisis in the late 70s and early 80s. And I had a few of those over the past few years. Bought them, sold them, bought them, sold them, bought them, sold them. And I bought one because I really, really missed it. And a few weeks after that arrived, I had the news that they're re-releasing or resurrecting the brand Amida.
You had the skinny, didn't you? You knew.
No, I didn't. I swear to God, I didn't. I swear to God, I didn't. But maybe I... No, I didn't. No. Because I think I bought it before and it was broken. The thing is, I really love those watches, but they're just so cool and absolutely useless that eventually I look at them and I'm like, I don't need them. But then as soon as I sell it, and this is, Mike, this is the only watch that I bought and sold about 4 times. Obviously not the same model, not the same one, but the same model, right? And so I went to, while I was in Geneva for Geneva Watch Days.
Didn't you have one where you had to like source a movement or something?
So yeah, so basically all of them, what happens was Amida produced a 1 jewel and a 17 jewel movement for their jump power watches. But this Digitrend always had a 1 jewel movement. But there's a trick that you can buy the same exact movement with 17 jewels. You have to take it to watchmaker. They need to swap the hour and minute plates. And then there we go. So that's what happened. Every single time I bought the watch. Now this time I have the vintage one. It's not even working. So I'm looking for a donor with a 17 jewel movement. So I have to take it to our mutual friend Timo. And he will swap the minute hands, a minute and hour discs. You can imagine what he'll say to me. Because he likes this.
Nothing good.
No, nothing good. No.
Won't it?
Exactly. And so then when I was in Geneva, I went to see the new re-edition of Amida. And it turns out that some of the guys that are involved, I know them personally from previous projects. And this watch is as close to the original as possible. You can see the picture, as I said, and I will send it to I will make some better ones and give it to you. The size is almost the same. The thickness is almost the same. This time it's an automatic movement inside, but it's the same idea, the same design, the same prism inside, the same display and everything. And I love the watch. I have it for review for a few weeks. And I'm going to hopefully write it up this weekend. And yeah, that's what I'm wearing. I've been wearing that. I think it came out this Monday or Tuesday officially.
Is it limited or no?
So basically what they're going to do is they're going to have like a pre-price, like a pre-production model, which is cheaper than the regular production will be. And then eventually I think they will raise the price. It is not a cheap watch.
I was about to say, this is no longer a throwaway, is it?
No. But you can feel like the original Amida is a chromed case. As I said, a 1 jewel movement. It's kind of flimsy, kind of light, kind of, you know, this one is not. I think the price is around 3,000 Swiss, and then the actual price will be around 3,500.
Okay, now
or something like that, like 2,900 and 3,500, something like that.
I thought the original Amida, they made a black one and a base metal color, like a normal steel color, right?
So yeah, so according to them, funnily enough, the steel one, the chromed one, was the original. And the black one was actually, again, according to the guys, somebody's private project. So it was never done by Amida. It was just somebody got a bunch of new old stock cases and just had them either DLC or PVD coded. Just to give you a few details, this one has a Soprod P092 inside. As I said, it's an automatic movement with a jumping hour disc because the whole thing about the Amida is it's a jump power. It has 44 hours of power reserve, blah, 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 316L steel. You will see this in the article. It's water resistant to 50 meters and it's, 2,900 Swiss francs excluded VAT. Imagine it weighs 110 grams, so it's a lot of steel.
Imagine using that underwater.
Ah, yeah. Good luck reading the time. It comes on a very cool kind of what's the
almost like felt.
What's the material that Porsche uses?
Alcantara.
Alcantara, almost like an Alcantara strap. With like orange lining, and I don't know. I don't know if I can say that. But the original Amida came in a bracelet, and I'm not going to finish.
Okay. So do you think they'll do a black-coated version? Probably at some point.
The original one, so the according to them, the fake one, or let's say customized one, came on a black rubber strap, remember? That would be awesome.
That would be cool. I mean, seems like an easy play. Now, how do you set the time? Where's the crown?
So the crown is on the right side, as you had with the regular one. You just pull it out, and then, you know, it's basically a jump power, so you only see 5 minute increments on the minute disc. So you see 5, 10, 15, etc. And then once you reach, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55, then you see 0, 0. Then the hour, exactly, the hour disc advances to the next hour.
It's cool. I got to say, it's very cool. I don't know. I feel like, I feel like $1,500 to $2,000 would have been a more, let's call it palatable. Because, look, I mean, they're making a specialty watch here, so I get it. You know, they're not, they're not going to, well, they've got expenses to cover, right? So that's the challenge on something like this, but I'm glad they did it. And if you say it's well executed, then I'm sure there'll be people out there who dig it. So
no, it's very nicely done. I mean, I had the vintage one. I had my vintage watch there, but they also had a vintage in the briefcase, and they had the new ones. And it's really, I would say, 95% the same in terms of size. It's obviously much heavier because of the movement, because of the case and everything else like that. But when you put it on the wrist, it really feels heavy. It feels quality. I mean, it's 110 grams. So, you know, that's as a comparison, the Tudor Gold Black Bay that they introduced was 200 grams. This is 110 grams on a strap.
Yeah. So it's a heavy watch.
It's a heavy watch, yeah. It's a sturdy watch. So, anyways, that's what I'm wearing. I hope I'll still have it. If not, then I'll ask for another one when I'm in London so I can show it to you.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool indeed.
So that's mine. What's on your wrist?
Well, I'm wearing a substantial watch as well, but it's not that heavy. And I shot you a picture of this before we recorded, because this is really your wheelhouse. But I had bought, gosh, this must have been a month and a half, 2 months ago. And I don't want to say I forgot about it, but I had it shipped to my parents in Florida. So I picked it up when I was over there a couple weeks ago. This is I don't know. What era would you say this is, Balazs?
50s. I think it's early to mid-50s, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a large chrome-plated Tissot anti-magnetique. And you wrote the, I would say, the authoritative article on these.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an exaggeration, but thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I refer to it a lot, actually, when I'm looking at these things. And
To Lawrence.
What's that?
To Lawrence, the other Tissot nut from '50s. '50s Tissot nut.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember when Tissot came back out with like an anti-magnetic. You wrote a really nice article on the history, and you included some documents and things like that with yours. And
true, yeah,
yeah. So I always wanted one, but honestly, I had never seen one, but there was a seller, or is a seller, in the U.S. in the Chicago area who specializes in watches from this era, and honestly finds a lot of new old stock type pieces. And this one is basically unworn, and It's 37.5 millimeters by 45 millimeters, and it is a big looking watch.
Yeah, it's huge.
So there's not much bezel on it, but what's really fascinating is when you look at it from the side, the domed crystal is massive. It is.
Yeah, it's almost thicker than the case, huh?
Yeah.
Taller than the case.
It's incredible. When I got it, I kind of looked at the watch, I put it on, I was excited about it. And then I was like, whoa, what's going on there? And yeah, that's the original crystal, which is cool to hear that yours has that too. So
yeah.
But chrome watch, which a lot of people don't love, although in this condition, it's the same as steel to me, because it doesn't have any kind of wear or base metal showing. And no, it's neat. It's bigger than the watches that I've been wearing lately, which sounds funny. But I think, I'm going to do an article here because I was just thinking, like, I'm wearing now some really smallish tank type watches. I'm wearing stuff like this. I own a Panerai, not that I ever really wear it, but like there's stuff that doesn't physically fit your wrist. I get that. But the rest of it, I swear, is just like, it's just getting your mind over it or into it. You know, it's just purely whether or not you can get past it. But it's amazing that a watch like this at that size, which is nothing that substantial, looks so huge.
Yeah, I think the problem with these watches sometimes is, I mean, not these ones, but when they do the re-editions, they make them too thick.
Yeah,
too big and too heavy. And the reason they're so extremely comfortable on the wrist is because they are big, but they're not thick or heavy. Yeah. So I think that's why, but they always put in an automatic movement, or if it's a manual, then it's a Sellita, which is the same thickness, whether that's manual or automatic, pretty much.
Yep.
So, but that's, yeah, these are hand wound movements, thin case, like a pancake, thin but large.
Yeah.
Not American pancake, like a German pancake.
Any idea what's inside these?
No, I can't remember. But I know that I had with mine, I have the extract from the archives.
Okay.
Tissot sent me some information as well. The cool thing about the article that you mentioned is that there's a picture that's also from Tissot of all the logos that they used in different decades, remember? Mm-hmm. So by the logo, you could actually pretty much
tell the date,
or at least the decade or the era that the watch is coming from. And I think yours and mine is the same. That's my favorite Tissot logo with a long T, but the long top of the T. Yeah. That's like early 50s, like 40s, late 50, late 40s, early 50s, I think.
So yeah,
it's a great era.
Yeah, and like I was telling you, this watch was, I'll say it, was $450. So I can't complain about that.
No. People say, oh, it's a chrome case and this and that. Sure, a chrome case is not a steel case. I get it. But there's nothing wrong with it. So,
Tissot awesome. Didn't make much in steel in this size, did they?
So I don't. So mine is, I don't think so. Like mine is, I think it's also a chrome case. It's pretty much new old stock. And the case back is steel. But the case is also chromed. I mean, it's mine, you can still see the original polishing, which is great. And again, it shows that the watch has not been worn. And yours got the leaf hands, I think, right? Yep. Mine has this the loomed hands, or the not even tritium but radium hands. But yeah, that's just one of the many styles that they did back then.
Yeah,
so it's a very cool pickup.
Yeah, it's fun, and it will go with, I think I mentioned it on a show, but it will go with the Tissot pocket watch that I will.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you mentioned it the last time, I think.
Yeah, so that also has the similar logo, and I'm excited to get that. I've been looking, Balazs, for a cool like pocket watch stand, to just hanging on, and I've not found anything yet, but I'm thinking here in London, there is what is called the silver vaults, which is where I guess the government used to store silver, and maybe there's still some element of that for private, but there are apparently like stalls inside of different people selling silverware, silver bowls, like vintage stuff. And I'm wondering if I go down there, if I can find a little pocket watch stand made of silver.
Check it on eBay.
Man, I haven't found much. I found a couple Art Deco things like made of bronze, which would clash with the steel case.
Yeah.
And they were pretty pricey, like the kind of thing that sits out there for 2 years. You know what I mean?
All I need to say is dunks go really well with waistcoats. So hit that Savile shop, get that waistcoat,
and you're good to go. My dunks and my pocket watch.
I mean, at least the hats are matching. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah. So
yeah, it's an awesome watch.
Yeah. Thanks. So yeah, there we go.
You need to put it in a honey wind.
Well, it's kind of a mustardy strap right now, which doesn't look bad on it, but you're right. Maybe a honey wind would look better.
So. Charlie Dunn, we bigged you up enough. Send us some honey winds.
Yeah, send us like 5 of each width.
Sizes, yeah.
Each person, by the way.
Five each.
16 to 22.
I'm good. Yeah, well, I would say I'm going to see a friend of a mutual friend of Eric and me, but they're from different cities, so he won't be able to take some of the honey winds. But I know if he could, he would.
Yeah. But
there we go.
Well, Eric likes FedEx, so you never know. All right. Well, so there we are with the Hengelenx controller. What do we think here? Do we cut off our episode here and do part two where we actually talk about something a couple days from now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a special episode because we talked about this. We didn't want to leave you guys without an episode, but next week is just around the corner. So we're going to probably finish this episode now, and then we're going to come back and record a second part. And this one comes out, I don't know, somewhere around the weekend, right, Mike? It's up to you. And then the second part, which is actually the main topic, will come out Tuesday. So in a few days.
Sir.
Yeah.
Very well done. So until we speak again in a few days, Mike is out.
Balaji is out as well.